Welcome to Only Little Coder podcast. This is your host, Abdul Majid. In this podcast, I talk to open source developers, community organizers, and content creators to know what they do and how they do it so that we all can get inspired. In this episode, we are talking to Bhavesh Bhatt, who's a YouTuber of a very popular machine learning channel that goes by his name. So thank you so much, Bhavesh, for joining us. Can you tell us about yourself and about your channel?
Firstly, thank you, Abdul, for inviting me over. It's truly an honor to be a part of this. To tell you something about me, I think I run a small YouTube channel. I crossed 19,000 subscribers. So it's a very good feeling that I have currently in terms of how my channel is growing. I create content specifically for data science and machine learning. Something on the grounds of creating like a 5-10 minute explainer video is what I try to keep in my channel in form of the videos as well.
Okay. Thank you so much for giving the details about your channel. And that's actually a huge number. So how did you get the idea of starting this channel, and when did you start? Like, how old it is?
Yeah. So my channel, I started my channel in November 2017. So it is around 2.5 years back. So it's closing in on 3 years. So that was a time when I kind of used to write blogs on Medium. So I kind of started off by writing blogs. And at an individual level as well, I've been very fascinated by the whole video creation activity. I kind of look up to a lot of video creators as well that are out there on YouTube who are kind of providing, say, free education as well. So I was always fascinated by the whole field of, say, creating videos and uploading them on YouTube. So that is how I kind of started creating videos. My first video was like a simple walkthrough of my blog. A lot of, say, subscribers, a lot of people who viewed the video also commented that they're not able to hear audio and there were a lot of glitches in between as well. But yeah, I mean, that was the start that I had. I just started off creating content without having anything in mind. And the basic thing that I wanted, or the basic theme that I thought of creating videos around, is something that I wanted to consume going forward. So if there is a concept that I want to later revise, then I kind of create content around it. So I don't want to create like very lengthy videos that take around 20-30 minutes to explain a concept. I want to keep the video short so that when I have to revise a concept, I go back to my video and view the entire content in, say, close to 5-10 minutes. So that's how I started creating videos.
I think, that's one thing that resonates a lot with me also. I think creating content that you want to consume later on, I think that is how a lot of people actually, if you see a lot of bloggers also, they write it so that they can... it's like a self archive. So you started videos like that, you're saying, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but how did you, initially, like you said, the first video, how did you get traction to that video? So how did you, share it? So did you share it with your friends and family, or you already had a massive social media following who just jumped in?
No. So I'll be very honest. So I'll give you like a good background about what my education is and how I entered data science and all of that. So I've done my bachelor's in electronics. I did my master's in embedded systems, post which I worked with companies like MathWorks and Cisco. So I was part of Cisco in the software engineering team as well. I was kind of happy with what I was doing. I was not cribbing about software engineering as a field as well. The only thing that kind of brought me to data science is I wanted to relocate back to Mumbai from Bangalore. So that was the reason that I kind of came back. And given the profile that I had, there weren't any companies in Mumbai that could have, say, given me a proper job opportunity in the field that I wanted to explore. So that is how I entered data science and machine learning. I kind of did a lot of online courses. And it is during this time itself, I started writing blogs and the whole video creation activity happened. My video creation activity started somewhere around the time that I got my first job in data science. So I got my first job in a fintech startup called as FlexiLoans. And to be very honest, it was a very enriching experience in terms of the kind of work that I was exposed to. So it was here that I began creating videos. Whatever little I understood and whatever little I kind of learned in my job, I started creating content around it. I started creating explainer videos on topics like random forest, decision tree. When I was, say, studying about decision tree, there wasn't even a single video which could explain how Gini index works and how, say, entropy-based decision tree is computed. There was a lot of content in terms of how do you visualize a decision tree. But back then, there was not much content in terms of how a decision tree is actually created using such criteria that are there. So that's how I started creating video. Getting to 1,000 subscribers was a big fight. I kind of have to admit that once you have to reach to that 1,000 subscriber mark, that is the initial hurdle that is there. So I essentially what I used to do is I used to post on social media platforms like LinkedIn. Then there were a lot of other Facebook groups as well that I kind of utilized in order to say share my content across. But yeah, that is all that I did. I kind of waited for the time that YouTube realizes that this video is kind of gaining a lot of traction in terms of view time, as well as the amount of comments that were coming in. So that kind of helped to boost my overall video content performance as well. So that's how the channel grew. But yeah, getting to that initial 1,000 subscriber mark is a big challenge.
Okay, and so the other problem usually that we all see is, so when you start an initiative like this, like you just said, right, your initial phases, and when you're trying to popularize your service, so you would see a lot of negativity from a lot of people. A lot of people would criticize your work, or they would say that don't do this thing, this is not a place for this thing. So this kind of criticism is still available and it happens. So did you face anything like that, or do you have any tips? You know, how did you overcome?
A lot of it actually. So I kind of stopped ignoring. I kind of stopped reacting to all such criticism that came along. I think what I realized with, say, the span of 3 years is content, if it's good, it will sell. It may take time to kind of say go through every, say, every person who's kind of trying to learn Python or who's trying to learn data science and machine learning. But essentially, if your content is good, it will find a way in a lot of people's subscription as well. So generally, initially, I used to feel bad when I used to get a negative comment or when someone used to say that this is not the platform to say self-market your own content. But I used to happily ignore all of them. Initially, yes, it felt bad, but after a while, I was like, if I have to say enable the growth of this channel, then I'll have to go for it in terms of say promoting it in different channels. So yeah, it's never been easy promoting content. The initial part is the most toughest part, gaining traction and having that multiple videos which are giving you constant views with time, and some videos which are kind of indexed by YouTube and Google collectively. So a lot of my traffic is driven by Google search as well as YouTube search. So that's how I kind of gain traffic in the long run as well.
Okay, and you said that you ignored those things. So is it in your nature to ignore and move on, or was it like something else? Because it is difficult for a lot of people actually to do.
I mean, I'm a very sensitive guy to be very honest. But then, if you look at the broader picture, if you look at how the channel is proceeded, it was difficult initially in terms of, say, going through all the criticism that is available online as well. I used Reddit as a platform as well initially to promote my content. So some people are really very encouraging in terms of looking at the video, giving, say, positive feedback in terms of what can be improved. But some people are there to criticize your efforts, come what may. So I was just kind of, so I was just revising neural networks a couple of days back, and I was going through three blue, one browns video on how do you visualize backpropagation. So essentially, even that video, which is so very well, so it's so crystal clear in terms of explaining backpropagation with the entire visualization piece, even that video had around 200 dislikes. So come what may, you will have people who would dislike your content. But essentially, if you look at the broader picture, if you have, say, 95 people saying that your content is good and 5 people are there to kind of bring you down, you should have that mentality in terms of, say, absorbing the good part of what you're doing and then moving forward. So initially, it was very difficult to say being criticized for something that you don't have that intention of being, say, criticized for the wrong thing. But I think, say, if you know your content is good, then essentially things will fall into place.
That's a nice point. You started with blog and then you started with videos. So how was this transition happening? So you're going through a lot of videos and then trying to take tips how to do it, or you just wanted to just put out a video?
So initially, my content was very shabby. I don't mind saying this as well. If you go through my initial content, the videos were really good in terms of the content quality, but the execution was something that a lot of my, so luckily, I had very good, say, friends. I wouldn't even call them colleagues in my first organization. All of them, all th so we had a team of 4 members in the data science team in my first company. So all three of them kind of criticized me really well in terms of how I can improve. And I really kind of appreciated the positive criticism that came along in terms of what can I do better in terms of creating content. So that's how I kind of evolved as a content creator. I kept learning, say, different things. So initially, if you look at my initial 30, 35 videos, all of those videos were one take videos. So I had no clue of what video editing is. By that time, I was not even able to, say, create custom thumbnails on YouTube. So I just pushed out content initially. I just waited for a feedback to come along. And with feedback, I kind of kept improving the content. I kind of took in maximum amount of feedback that I could from people that gave me very constructive, say, feedback as well. And that is how I kind of started incorporating things in my videos as well. Now I kind of do a bit of video editing. I kind of say remove the noise from the overall surrounding as well when I'm recording a video. But back then, when I started creating content, it was not very, say, presentable. The quality was good, but the way I presented it was not that great. But yeah, I mean, I'm still very happy in terms of how things have shaped out. And yeah, that is how I would even recommend young content creators to start with content. It's okay to not have the most fancy equipments around. I still don't have any fancy equipment to do a recording and say get the content up and running. It's very simplistic in terms of the things that I have right now. I've just invested 1,000 rupees in buying a tripod stand, nothing more than that. That's how I've been able to create content so far.
That is great. And what is the intention behind starting your channel in your own name? So there are some advantages having a brand on your own name. Some people have a separate brand name, even YouTube suggests that, I think. So how did you go about this?
So again, it was more of an accident that I started YouTube. So I didn't think of like having a brand name in terms of when I created my first video. Coming from an M.Tech background, I really like teaching. So teaching is something that you have to do in order to make some money during your master's. So I kind of got this feedback from a lot of juniors as well that you teach really well. You try to simplify, say, difficult concepts as well. So when I started creating content, one feedback that I got from a lot of people is you can explain, say, difficult, complex topics in a very simplified way. So that's how I started creating content, and that's been my motive so far as well. More than anything else, I enjoy the whole process of creating content. I don't think much about having like a brand value associated with it. Yes, it has its perks. When you apply for a job, you can say mention something about your YouTube channel as well with X number of subscribers, and it kind of gives you that brand automatically. But inherently, I've never thought about say creating a brand just by pushing out content that I feel is not good enough. So all the content that I've created is something that's very close to me. So yeah, I'm not very, say, hell-bent on having like a million subscribers and all of that. I think I'm very content in terms of what I have, irrespective of if it adds brand value or not.
Okay. And what is the thing that you would say that changed between Bhavesh with like 1,000 subscribers and Bhavesh with now 19,000? I think you mentioned about delivery. Is there anything else, maybe personally or on your YouTube channel level, that you find that it has like distinctly changed between that time and this time?
I think one thing that has distinctly changed is the amount of time that I spend now with respect to what I used to spend initially in terms of getting the content right. So back then, I used to invest, say, not less than 10 to 12 hours in order to get the content right. Initially, given I had to create videos in one go without any editing. And a lot of times my microphone would also give up in the entire process, so I had to re-record it. So for one video as well, I had around 8-9 cuts that used to consume good amount of time. But now, given I've posted around what close to 150 odd videos in both the channels combined, so I also run a small Python channel as well. So given 150 videos that I've uploaded so far, I think one thing that stands out is now I kind of have a sense of what the subscribers want or what is being consumed by the end user and how do I better utilize it. And I try to stick to like a fixed timeline given there's a lot of things going around in the workspace as well. So I try to keep the video creation activity as fast as possible. Like having very little fumbles in between. So I spend some time in laying out a foundation in terms of script as well, in terms of how I want to execute a video. And then I kind of have like a notebook ready, handy. Using Google Colab, I create most of the videos using Google Colab. So I spend good amount of initial hours in creating good content on Google Colab. Then I kind of have a rough skeleton of the script ready. And then I kind of go through the entire video creation activity in one or two goes maximum. And I'll spend very little time in video editing as well. So that's changed considerably. Secondly, I've become much more patient. So as I've initially mentioned, people don't accept you as much as they do now. Initially, people so one funny part is I was looking at a Facebook group. So initially, the moderator used to say such self-promotion content is not allowed in this group. And one fine day, I found that he's kind of shared my video as well. So things change with time. So yeah, that's how things have changed. So I've become patient. I used to get really bothered by the criticism that used to come in. But at this point of time, I'm much more calm in terms of handling criticism as well.
That is great. And even the instance that you mentioned, I think it's like a sweet memory, right? So do you have any such instances where maybe you put out a video and then someday someone met you and then said that this helped me? So do you have any such anecdotal experience that that is like a sweet memory for you?
Yeah, so I remember. So I used to teach at an organization, and so there are multiple batches that go around in those training sessions that used to happen. So one fine day, one person came up to me and he told me that your playlist on deployment, which is like a very simple class-based deployment videos that I had created. So he was kind of struggling to get a web application up and running. That is where he kind of came up to me and he told me that your videos are really good. And he kind of learned a lot in terms of the creating like a simple Flask application and say hosting it as well. So it was a very sweet memory for me as well when people kind of come up to me. So this has happened a lot in the training institutes that I used to teach. So yeah, it's a good feeling to be known for the little things that I do online as well.
And that is great. And one of the things that I've seen in your recent video is that there was a question, I think you were trying to answer question and answer. And you mentioned that not everyone knows all the concepts. And that was like, I think the first part of that. So in your case, how do you usually go about a video? How do you start from, if it is okay to share, how do you start from, ideation finally to upload the video? Can you just give us like a brief overview of how does it happen?
So one of the major sources of say one of the major sources of my content has been a lot of interaction with the students that I've had in the training institutes. So I've had the privilege of teaching at a lot of places during weekends. It is there that I understood that more than the fancy things that are going in the market, it's good to know basics. Like a lot of people that I interviewed sadly had very little idea of what multicollinearity is and how do you remove multicollinearity from your data set for a regression problem. So my strength, if you ask me, as someone who creates content or someone who say comes from a machine learning background, my prime focus or my prime core area is statistics. I am not very much swayed by the whole deep learning things that are going around. Yes, I have fair bit of idea of deep learning as well, but keeping track of everything that happens in deep learning is practically next to impossible according to me. If you're say out and out a researcher, then yes, you will get time for that as well. But given how things are in terms of data science in India, I think if you are good with statistical concepts, I think you will sail through really well. So in terms of how I create content, one of the major contributors to my topics were the student interactions that I had. So like a simple problem statement like reshape minus 1 comma 1 in NumPy, why do people even use that? So this was like a these sort of questions kind of kept populating, and some things in Stack Overflow also kind of explain it at a very not all of them, but some concepts are still very much in the say a gray area in terms of how students can say understand that concept better. So it is through those interactions that I kind of understood more about how I can say streamline the content. So the initial say phase is understanding the pain point of students. The next phase is creating content which is very simple. So if I have to understand a concept and if someone tries to teach me, I try to create that content that if I have to explain someone with bare minimum knowledge of say NumPy, bare minimum knowledge of say complex machine learning, how can I explain concepts in very simpler terms? So that's how I keep an idea in terms of what I have to express. Initially, I had a very slow system, so that is why initially I had a Jupyter notebook running locally. But once I've kind of say had the privilege of using Google Colab, I've never switched away from Google Colab to create content. So then I create a content basis, whatever I've understood and whatever I feel should be the most simplest example. And then I kind of create a script. So I have an initial pain point in terms of what that video is about. So it's very important to give context in terms of why someone would should watch that video. Then I go through the entire piece. Sometimes I skip some lines here and there, which I feel is, say, too basic to explain in such a video. And I kind of try to give out the concept in the most simplest terms. And yeah, that's how I kind of follow in terms of creating content. And I try to limit the video, say, as close, as small as possible. So the average attention span in terms of the data that I've looked at for my YouTube videos as well. For videos that I've done really good, given a 6 or 7 minute video as well, I've had a average watch time of around 50 to 60%. So that simply means even for a 7 8 minute video, there are people who would drop off early, there are people who would watch it till the end, but the median value or the mean value is somewhere around 55 to 60% of your video content, depending on how big your video is and how relevant it is for the end user. So basis that, what I do is I try to keep my video as small as possible. The adapted or whatever I've understood with YouTube's algorithms in terms of my research as well. For longer videos, it kind of tries promoting you, but I still feel whatever videos that I've created, I think the gain has been really good. So I try to keep it between 5 to 10 minutes. Some concepts, if they require like a lot of say explanation, then I kind of extend it to 10 to 15 minutes. So that's how I create content.
Okay, and I think you also made that point, right? So YouTube almost like tries to promote longer videos, and that's why channels like Free Codecamp the post 2 hours video, 3 hours video, 4 hours video.
Yeah.
So you have never tried that, or that doesn't align with your principle of delivering content.
Yeah, I mean, I that ideally doesn't align with my principle of delivering content. I think one time I thought I'll create a video like an end-to-end explainer video on NumPy, going through the entire function chains which are there. But then again, how long can you make that video? And essentially, so one thing which I feel, given I've been creating content for around 2.5 years, one thing that I feel I think I did a mistake is by not monetizing it when I was eligible for monetizing. So ideally, YouTube would have pushed my videos even further if I would have monetized the whole videos initially itself. So I didn't want to create that experience for the end user to watch an advertisement initially. But with a lot of discussions with the Google team in terms of the GDE program that we have as well, and in terms of reaching out to people or successful content creators as well, they told me that it is very important to say advertise your content. That is how YouTube kind of makes money, and you get a share of that as well. So that's how I've seen, say, reasonable growth once I've monetized the channel as well. So that is one thing. So if there is someone who is eligible for monetization, if you are eligible for YouTube's monetization policy, don't wait even a single day. You never know when YouTube's algorithm would go crazy and would show it out to millions of people. So yeah, that is one thing that I've done, which I feel if I can go back in time and change, but I'm still okay with whatever I have in terms of, say, subscribers and however the channel is progressing. I'm extremely content about that as
I think
well.
that is again a very important observation I've noticed in tech community, especially someone who is a developer. So they're always hesitant to, when they have an opportunity to make money off something that they know. So they're always
Yeah.
hesitant about that money part. They are ready to do anything on the weekend, but they just don't want to make money out of it. So do you think that that is a thing with tech community, or it's just individual mentality?
I think it is more to do with the whole individual mentality that is there. So for me as well, so I have an ad blocker plus installed. So ideally, I've so right now YouTube started say pushing out ads for when you have enabled Adblocker Plus as well. But back then, when I was eligible for, say, monetizing the channel, I had a discussion with the peers that I mentioned, and they told me they would, I mean, initially, since I've just reached, say, 1500 or 1600 subscribers, I was eligible back then itself, given the watch time restriction which YouTube has, and the threshold is around 1000 subscribers, if I'm not wrong. So I was eligible to monetize the channel back then, but I didn't, I don't know, I didn't like the whole feeling of, say, monetizing it and showing advertisements. I remember there is one channel which I wouldn't like to name. It creates content on time series. I don't remember the name itself, but so I read a lot of comments. I was kind of going through some time series videos from that channel, and they've inserted close to 5 to 6 advertisements in between their videos. So for me, given Adblocker Plus was on, it didn't bother me that much. But for people who are viewing those videos on cell phones, they'll have to wait for, say, 30 seconds, and that to that person is added non-skippable video ads. So that kind of destroys the experience of person who's there to learn. So I was kind of against that principle initially, but then what I realized is if I have to make the channel grow, then I'll have to monetize it someday or the other. So I remember when I monetized the channel, I had close to around 6,500 or 7,000 subscribers. So this is back in August last year. So after that, the channel's kind of picked up decently well. But yeah, I mean, for people who are, say, fresh in the whole YouTube space and who want to kind of, say, create a good amount of, say, subscription base, I think it's a good policy that they start monetizing as soon as the whole option is available.
Okay, that I think that's a very important tip that a lot of people would take. So the next thing that I wanted to know is, I don't know whether it is again a tech community thing or Indian thing. If you actually see, we usually idealize people who have, you know, put out some paid content, maybe a course on Udemy or written a book. But a lot of times we take like YouTubers like your videos for granted. So do you think that exists, or
Yes.
what is your opinion about it?
I don't know. I mean, how do I put it across? I think people who kind of put out paid content, even they are in for money. I mean, essentially, if you put in some amount of effort, you expect some return on investments on that as well. So I for YouTubers, at least, for people who've kind of say not had a the other selling point as well. So a lot of people have something to sell when they are on YouTube as well. They might have a Udemy course to sell. They might have something else to sell as well. For people who are in YouTube just for more of a hobby activity. So that is where sometimes I feel some people take YouTubers for granted. That is where sometimes I feel rather than investing that much time in, say, creating content out for free, why not think of even creating a Udemy course? But then all of that again boils down to how much of that course would actually be valid in terms of how much content is being pushed out in the data science community. I think there are a plethora of courses out there already running. So why dilute your quality in terms of creating something that might not even sell? So that is where I've kind of been very clear in terms of creating content on YouTube. And I generally don't think of YouTube as an ROI mechanism. I do it more of like a hobby thing. I kind of enjoy creating videos. That is something that I really like. I feel happy after I've created a good video end to end. So yeah, that's how I don't let the whole ROI thing come in between
Okay,
creating
nice.
content.
And I think you also made another good point, is that today there are like tons of content out there. So would you still advise someone to start a channel, or you would be like, no, we already have enough content? Or if you want to tell someone to start a channel, what is your advice for them?
I think even though there are good amount of say content creators all out there, but I think there's always good scope for people who can create content and who can deliver content that's already not being covered. I think there's good amount of space in terms of if you have like a niche that you can follow. If you only want to create videos on deep learning, explaining the entire pipeline end to end, I think there are very few channels that are there. I remember if you search for LSTM on YouTube, I think there's one YouTuber. I don't remember his name, but he's just uploaded three or four videos. He's just recently created an attention-based transformer video. I think they've not gone through it, but his explanation on RNN, his explanation on LSTM is by far the best layman explanation that I can think of. Let me catch hold of his name. Just give me a moment. For LSTM. Yes, so he's renamed his channel to The AI Hacker. Michael Fee is what his name is. He's just uploaded 3-4 videos, but good quality content. And he has close to around 4,500 subs, if I'm not wrong. 4.75 subs. Very amazing content. I think I've really enjoyed going through his videos as well. So, yes, there is good amount of content out there. But not every content is consumed as well. That is something that's like a fact. So if you have like a niche, if you follow one theme really well, then I think there is place for plenty of content creators out there. So that would be my advice to anyone who wants to create content
great.
As well.
I think that is taking me to the next question. So do you have any inspirations on YouTube? I think you already mentioned Michael Fay. In general, yeah. You know, do you have any inspiration around content creator? It could be like anyone, not just machine learning.
So I think the first, so when I was kind of having one of the problem statements that was given to me was to create a CNN based model. And I kind of went through Brandon Rohrer's video on CNN. That is like the initial video that everyone has to watch. So he creates some amazing amount of content. I think whatever content he's created, I don't think he's monetized his channel. So all of the subscribers that he has is kind of organic. So that's how his videos are. And he's done some amazing contribution to the open source as well. Yeah, I think he's running a course as well. So I think his videos or his content is something that I really look up to. Then there is someone with the name Lewis. I don't remember his full name, but I think Brandon also recommended his channel a couple of years back, if I'm not wrong. I think when I have to explain PCA, I think he's created that video in terms of principal component analysis, which no one has ever been able to crack. With respect to creating covariance matrix and all of the other fundamental details which are involved. So I think his videos are also something that I really look up to. Brandon is there. Then 3 Blue 1 Brown. I think I'm getting the order right as well. 3 Blue 1 Brown, right?
Yeah, I think that's everyone gets confused.
3 Blue 1 Brown. Yeah. So I think his videos are like godlike. I think he is the ultimate content creator. Think his content is simply amazing. I think none of the content creators can actually match up to the amount of complexity that he adds to his videos. Just the amount of the amount of code that he would have written to generate those visualizations. I am simply amazed by the quality of content that he creates. I mean, we are no one in terms of the content that we create. I think he's at a different level altogether. I think he should start his own website itself. Wherein he shouldn't even upload things on YouTube. I think he's doing a good job by uploading it on YouTube, but I think the content that he creates is next to godlike.
Great. So these are the three, or you have some more time?
I think there are many, but if you ask me on the top of my mind, I think these three are the ones that I really look up to.
Okay. Other thing is, usually a lot of people do this kind of stuff, and then you know, it is all secretive. It's inside a box, no one knows. So one of the reason I have this podcast is even to, you know, let people know how much effort goes in that. But still, a lot of people would be hesitant to come on this kind of thing, because you are like just sharing your secrets, a lot of tips. So what do you think about it? Like, why did you even come on to this and then share your knowledge with the world? So what is your opinion about that?
I think one thing that is there is it's okay to know different people's secrets. I think what happens is ideally, if you have to be successful in something, it's okay to share a couple of things here and there. The one thing that, say, differentiates people who are doing things with consistency and people who kind of try it out a couple of times and then kind of give up is how much of it do you think of as something that you are doing just for the sake of doing and something that you're passionate about. So I think I'm really passionate about what I'm doing. I really enjoy creating content. I don't do it just for the sake of uploading a video once a week or once in 2 weeks or something of that sort. I really like what I'm doing, and that's the reason I didn't have any fears in terms of, say, expressing when you should monetize your channel and what are the best practices that one should follow in creating content as well. Ideally, what I've seen is a lot of content creators start off initially well. They create a couple of content and they kind of get disheartened when they see that their subscriber count is not increasing, or when their view time is not increasing and they're not able to grow the channel as per their expectations. But if you hang in there, if you are, creating good amount of content, then I'm pretty sure you will have a good, successful, YouTube career, so to speak, as
great.
Well.
That is a lot of great tips. Thank you so much, Bhavesh. So where can people find you? So like your LinkedIn, Twitter?
I think I'm active on LinkedIn. But even now, LinkedIn is becoming too cluttered as well. So I'm kind of trying to avoid the social media for some time now. I think I've kind of deactivated my Facebook account. I use Twitter to just tweet about the content, the next video that I'm posting. Mostly I used to be very active on LinkedIn, but I'm kind of trying to dilute that thing as well. So yeah, Max to Max, I think LinkedIn is the most professional place where I will be a bit active, but apart from that, I'm kind of trying to remove all the social media presence that is there. I think social media is kind of not the the best place to hang around for a long
time. Okay, thank you so much, Bhavesh, for taking your time and doing this podcast for us, and I hope a lot of people would really really find it very helpful. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me over. Bye bye.